Well. I thought Write You a Song would be on a little hiatus for a few months, but just after I released the last episode with Josh Jenkins, I found out that one of his writing partners was interested in coming on, and who was I to say no to one of the most talked about country artists of 2021? I'm Tom Maley, and this is Write You a Song. Now, if you listen to this podcast at all, then you've heard Walker Hayes' name drop by a few other writers who've collaborated with him. There's a lot of respect in Nashville for him. He's been there since the early 2000s, but all this time, he's been mostly under the radar. Things started to change for him in 2017 when he had a pretty big hit with You Broke Up With Me, and then last year, he absolutely crushed it. Fancy Like wasn't just a hit, it became nothing less than a national sensation with a viral dance, those TV commercials, and it did spark some grumbling. There were country music purists that didn't like Fancy Like was country rap, and if I'm honest, I kind of started off as one of them. The first few times I listened, I thought, what's this? But then it sort of sucked me in. It's got a real charm to it, and look, spoken word hits are nothing new in country music. Charlie Daniels on Easy Rider, Devil Went Down to Georgia, C.W. McCall, Convoy, Big John, Jimmy Dean, Toby Keith, I Want to Talk About Me, Hank Jr. Born to Boogie, Dirt Road Anthem, Jason Aldean. And that's kind of how I started to look at Fancy Like. Sure, it's not an exact comparison. The rhythm in Fancy Like is a little more urban than Backwoods, but those lyrics, they're as country as a two-job working family, which is basically what Walker and his wife Lainey still were until that song took off. And it's just fun. Is that such a crime? It's also, if you really listen, a very honest song, which I've come to find out, and you're about to, is the only bullseye that Walker aims for. Sorry for the lengthy intro, but this is a really cool interview. And without further ado, here it is. Walker Hayes, thank you so much for taking time out of your enormously busy schedule to talk to us here on Write You a Song. It's funny, our previous month's guest, Josh Jenkins, you've written with him. We'll get more into that later. But in the middle of the interview, which was recorded back in October, we were talking about you, and I said, I'd love to have Walker on someday. And bam, here you are. So thank you for being here.
Dude, thank you for having me. Songwriting is my greatest passion. I mean, without a doubt, hands down, ask anybody who knows me. I love four things. I love Jesus. I love my wife and kids, and I love to write a song.
Well, and you, for a lot of people, you know, I think they don't realize everything that you have been through being in country radio. I remember you coming through our radio station back in like 2009 or 10, and you were just this kind of guy with long hair in the front that kind of covered his eyes, and you did a couple of songs and acoustic songs, and there was just a ton of passion. And then that first part of your career really never went anymore. I do want to talk about some of the songs from that time period. And you know, for those who don't know your backstory, at one point you'd been dropped by your label. You'd gone to work at Costco. How did you hang in there?
Man, I mean, honestly, you know, I think the Lord had other plans, you know, if I was ever thinking about kind of hanging it up. But honestly, just this, like, for lack of a better way to explain it, I mean, I'm just crazy, you know. I'm not that smart. I am. I'm not a forward think, like a long term thinker. When all that was going on, when I got dropped from Capitol, and I was working at Costco, it sounds crazy, but I still woke up every day and wrote a song, you know, and I wrote a lot of songs about what I was experiencing. So it was kind of a win-win going on behind the scenes that helped me. You know, I expressed my feelings about my dreams. I've wrestled with my dream a lot. You know, I've prayed many times that I would just have a new dream, you know, because my dream was making a fool out of me. You know, there were days, you know, when I was working at Costco, man, it was humbling moment after humbling moment. I mean, I remember when I got my job at Costco, I mean, there was a guy at one of my shows, and he knew all the words to my songs, and he wanted my autograph. And when, as soon as he said he worked at Costco, I said, I need a job, man. I said, I'll give you my autograph if you give me a job. And he's the guy, he's a friend who got me, you know, a side job at Costco. But man, honestly, I don't know. You know, I wish for all the dreamers out there, I could answer that question, like why I didn't give up. But you know, there were nights where I was like, you know, how do I be a better dad? Do I continue to chase this dream, or do I be responsible and give up this dream? And I didn't know the answer. And so I wrote about not knowing the answer, you know? So yeah, I think it was some ignorance, some stubbornness. It was definitely, you know, I had a wife who never one time said, hang it up, you know? So I know that's one in a gazillion, you know, that's just, that's rare, you know, for a spouse to watch someone chase an elusive dream, and drag a family basically through, you know, financial hardship after hardship and still, you know, and still enjoy it, you know, the dream. So, you know, I got to give a lot of credit to Lainey and my kids for being up for the ride. But yeah, man, I just, you know, from the first time I ever wrote a song, I just couldn't stop. And I can't. I mean, I can't, I won't. You know, there was a, you know, I don't know. I can't really answer. I can't pinpoint why I didn't go home, because I got a lot of friends who did, you know, and I have a lot of friends who are way, way better at me than I am at songwriting, but they went home, you know.
Your style of music changed too from the first part of your career to now, you know, and there are, let's be honest, there are, you know, country purists who look at your music on the face of it and go, well, that's not country. That's, you know, hip hop or rap or whatever. But it, to me, and I'll be honest with you, I kind of was in that camp up until recently, and I started kind of doing more of a deep dive into your music, and I'll get to more of that here in a bit. But it seems to me that you went with who you really are and things started to take off. Is that an accurate read?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. You know, I think that's one of the hardest things to do as a musician, because, you know, you grow up and you honor your influences so much, and you know, they're your heroes. So you don't mind sounding like them or doing what they did. And then you come to Nashville, and Nashville has a, you know, like it or not, there's a box, you know, of commercial stuff that's working at any given moment. And you kind of have this temptation to aim inside those boundaries, because that seems like the easy path. And, you know, I did that for a while, you know, I mean, I got in the room with the same writers, of the artists that were having hits. I got in the room with the same producers who were, you know, having hits, and it didn't, you know, like you expressed earlier, man, my first go round was a flop, and most people don't even know, but that was actually my second go round. I mean, I was signed at Mercury in 2006. And I made about a half of an album, and it just got shelved, and I got dropped. And then I got signed by Capitol, and I actually had songs that went to radio, but they flopped. And then I got dropped again, you know? I mean, it honestly, hitting that rock bottom place, you know, at Costco, and writing for no reason except for the fact that I just had to write, that's where things began to change for me. And so you're correct in that assessment. When I finished trying to aim and be something that was acceptable, that is when people started responding to my music, which was who I was And man, what a freedom, you know, to wake up every day as an artist and say, well, what's your craft? And my craft is just being me. That is unbelievable. It feels like I'm flying, you know?
Your story, while you were sharing that, reminds me of several episodes back of another story of a singer-songwriter who also talked about hitting absolute rock bottom. Nothing was connecting. And so he and a buddy just said, you know what, we're going to go in, we're going to make the music that we want to make. And if people like it, great. And if not, well, we've done something that we enjoy and that we like. And that's John Rich of Big and Rich. And that's where their first album came from.
Yeah. I mean, those boys made some waves. I mean, that music was amazing. Not to mention the stuff, you know, they were a part of with, you know, Gretchen Wilson and, you know, all those projects. But, you know, and again, like their music made some ripples, you know, it stirred some controversy. You know, some people didn't appreciate that style, but it was what they, you know, it was who they were and what they wanted to do. And there's something to be said about that. You know, I think audiences are smart. And they can smell contrived, you know, and they're brighter than I think Nashville gives them credit. They want believability. And while honesty and authenticity, while it can challenge, you know, a traditional listener, a purist listener, whatever you want to call it, at the same time as it kind of gets under their skin, it's drawing someone deeper in, you know, there's the flip side of that coin. So yeah, big shot. I mean, I loved, the Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy movement. That was crazy. I mean, that was so loud, in Nashville, and we were around for that.
What did you grow up listening to? What were some of your big influences?
You know, I grew up, most people don't know this guy, but I walked in. There was this record store called Peaches in Mobile. And my first tape I ever bought was a live tape of a guy named Harry Chapin. And
you kind of cut out there, and I want people to hear that. Did you say it was Harry Chapin? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was Harry Chapin. And he had one hit. You know, he had Cats in the Cradle. And, you know, I think that was a big pop hit for him. But the rest of his music was so quirky. And I just listened to that over and over and over. And honestly, I didn't have a genre. I never picked a genre as a kid. I mean, I loved Mariah Carey's Vision of Love. I loved Hit. You know, anything on the Waffle House jukebox, you know, I was into it. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's funny is I listened to songs like Fancy Like growing up. Like, it didn't matter what genre it was. If it was top 40, I was in. And then I also listened to rap. And, you know, I also got down with, like, The Band, Allman Brothers, Marshall Tucker, Coolio, Tupac, Two Live Crew, 311, Kid Rock, you know, back in the day, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Alabama. I just listened to the biggest songs of that decade, you know, the 90s. And I was into it all. And I didn't really adapt to a culture of a genre or whatever. I just listened to it all. And, I mean, my dad was a lover of classical music. And I love some of that. I mean, I went to college and got a degree in piano and just learned. I mean, I played classical music for 4 years at Birmingham Southern. I mean, I just love all kinds of music, you know?
And I got a feeling that you were also listening to the lyrics. You were paying attention to what they were saying. It wasn't just about the musicality. It was about the lyrics and the messages too. Yes.
Totally. You know, and it's funny I never wrote music. Like growing up as a kid, I never was like, I want to write that. But I did love lyrics. And, you know, I remember hearing country lyrics, especially, and noticing a difference, noticing an integrity where, as far as the words were concerned, with songs, for instance, like Don't Take the Girl, you know, When You Say Nothing at All, just these songs that, like, they kind of mess with you, and they're really just preparing you to be punched in the face with these massive hooks, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I did notice as a kid, I was like, there's something amazing at how these, you know, these phrases are turned, you know, just to see you smile. Those choruses, you know, that they disappear for a verse, but they come back and work in a different scenario. It's like, I could notice that there was some kind of masterful puzzle piecing together thing that was going on with country music. But again, as a young kid, I never thought to myself, I'd like to write that, you know, stuff one day. I mean, Cats in the Cradle, for instance, you know, it's like the story of a child, you know, growing up to be a dad himself, and how that chorus comes back and it haunts you and it works in every scenario. But yeah, I didn't know it, but I was absorbing all that, and I had no idea that it would be poured into my own career and craft later in life.
A child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it, and as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then.
And it's funny, I love those moments in life where you get places and you kind of look back and you go, oh, weird, I was headed here the whole time. Mm. I just didn't know that. And that's kind of how music is for me. You know, I mean, I loved it dearly. And I shared a passion for music with my father like nothing else. But again, I never thought that it would lead to this, you know, me sitting on this podcast talking to you about my life and career. You know, it's pretty wild.
Was and I don't know if I'm wording this right, but was marrying hip hop or pop influences with country's honesty like something you settled on consciously? Or because it's here's the thing, like I've been doing country radio for almost 40 years, and you know, through that whole time, every now and then somebody, who's going to be the next Garth Brooks? Who's going to be the next Tim McGraw? Who's going to be the next? There are no next Garths or Tims or Alan Jacksons. There is only one Garth, one George, one Al. You know what I mean?
Right.
The ones right. who blow up are the ones that come along and do something completely different. You are in that category. You're something else entirely. Was that conscious? Go ahead, finish my thought.
No. I mean, honestly, all the things you're saying, you know, they just excite me because in my mind, it's like for many, many, many years, I heard not fancy like, but just that sound. I heard all those sounds meshing, and I knew that it would be different. I knew that eventually there was a sound that it wasn't Sam Hunt and it wasn't Florida's Georgia Line. It fit on the same playlist, but it was my own thing, and it was Southern. And honestly, a lot of the songs on this album have that. And I, I will say it's a scavenger hunt, man. I mean, it's not, you know, finding a sound, holy cow, it's miraculous. I mean, when you, like, when you take AA and Fantasy Life, to me, that is the, that's the magic right there. And I am so glad we found it, because I'm not sure I ever thought we would, you know, like, what is me? Who am I? What do I sound like? And what is it that, that ends up being? Cause I agree with you. Those are once in a lifetime artists that come along, and you're right. They do something where you go, that's them, and it's nobody else. And people are going to try to duplicate it, and they may even have like a nice little career, but they're not going to be that.
Exactly.
Because that is that, and that's the only that you're ever going to hear. And I feel like we stumbled upon that sound, and I think a lot of it has to do with Joe Thibodeau, one of my producers that is kind of helps me. You know, a lot of these tracks people are hearing, AA, You Girl, a lot of those tracks, he takes the things, just these simple guitar things that I do at home, and then we get players and build around them, and it's truly magical. I mean, I think we have found a new lane of country, you know, and we're just lucky, man. I mean, I think there's a lot of people in Nashville who are very talented, and they're digging for that gold, and only a few of us ever have the opportunity to really find it, you know?
Well, I will admit that I was in that camp originally, where I was a bit dismissive of you. Oh, he's another one of these guys doing, you know, sort of hip hop country or whatever. And let's face, I mean, Fancy Like is a fantastic song, but it's fun. It's kind of a one-off. And the same with You Broke Up With Me. I started listening more on the advice of a couple of friends, including one, I think, you know, Matt Vieira, who used to be our music director at our radio station. And he's like, you got to listen to this guy. He's so much deeper than that. And so I did. I went and I have a whole new respect. It's like, to me, your music is like staring at one of those paintings where you stare at it long enough and the original image disappears. And then there's like this 3D image that comes out. That's what your music is. And I was listening to some of your stuff the other day, and I was thinking, you know, you're a singer. Yes. You're a songwriter. Yes. You're a musician, but you're almost a narrator, you know, with these stories. And here's the other thing that I would say to people who dismiss you as like hip hop. Your lyrics are humble. They're vulnerable. They're full of pain and truth. And you do not write throwaway songs. It's ironic that your two biggest songs are just kind of fun romps. But like AA, I think, is kind of starting to delve a little bit deeper. And you've got some really deep songs.
Man. Thank you for saying that. And, you know, I wish people knew, like, look, I agree with you about Fancy Like. It's fun, you know, and it's lighthearted. But, I think over this past year, we've seen the Fancy Like is the truth. And I do think there's a darkness to Fancy Like, which is, to me, that, hey, this is our life, and if it doesn't change tomorrow, we're fine, you know? But going back to what you said, I've got to, you know, let everybody know. I mean, I've been here 17 years, and I've been mentored by some of the greatest writers ever. Paul Nelson, Tony Hazelden, Shane McAnally. I mean, these are massive songwriters in the country genre, you know, who have written with me. They've all written 50 songs with me, you know, and so I don't not know how to write. And and my songs, I feel like my thing is vulnerability. I mean, music, all writing is to me is my journal, you know. I refuse to sit down and just chase a good idea. If it's not actually my life, I'm not interested. And I appreciate all you're saying. I gotta give credit to Shane and my label, because again, man, there's a lot of labels and a lot of publishing companies who will say, hey, look, I like all this vulnerable stuff, but it's not commercial, you know? So while I love every song you write about your dad or your kids or your addiction or your loss or recovery, that's really cool and all, but it's not going to make us any money. I don't have a team that says that. And they actually love that stuff the most. Now, good luck to them trying to sell it. But Fancy Like, you know, and You Broke Up With Me, those are the gateways, you know, to bring listeners in, hoping they get to hear the Craig, the Briefcases,
Sailboat, you know, the Dad beer Sailboat.
Exactly. But yeah, man, I mean, I have more freedom than any artist in Nashville, especially right now. There's not a single artist that has more freedom than me when I walk into a writer's room. I have zero rules. I have no one around me saying, give me a commercial hit. And that's why songs like AA can exist. You know, is because I walk in and somebody says, how you doing? And I say, man, I'm just trying to stay out of AA. And they say, let's write that. And we can. And we're not wasting time. I mean, those songs get to show up on albums.
Coffee cup, cold and black. Wish you had a little shot of Jack. Besides that, can't complain. Just trying to do the dang thing. Might change the oil in my truck. I ain't paying no $35. Kids need shoes, mama needs Levi's. And I'm just trying to keep my daughters off the pole and my sons out of jail. Trying to get to church so I don't go to hell. I'm just trying to keep my wife from figuring out that I'm married up. Well, she married way, way down in Alabama where they love Nick Saban.
I want to read you some quotes from, because, and these are just two songwriters that I've talked with who have referenced you, and I know there have been a couple of others, and I apologize for not having what they said either, but you really are respected by your fellow songwriters. This one is from Nicole Galyon, who you did an amazing song with. And she says, the way his brain works is like no other writer I've ever worked with. And I think he is one of the most underrated gems in our writing community. The way that he concepts songs is so complex. It honestly goes over some people's heads because we're just not used to certain things being that good. What's your reply to that?
I mean, I just honestly want to stare at the floor and shake my head because, you know, first of all, Nicole Guy, she's a hero of mine. The feeling is mutual. I trust her with my dearest song ideas. She is, if I have an idea that is precious to me, her name comes to mind as far as someone I want to share it with. But, you know, again, in a room with Nicole, there are no limits. And that's a valuable, valuable thing in a writer's room. And I don't know if every writer would say that about me, you know, that I've ever written with. I think there's something special about Nicole. And when I'm with her, I am an open book. I'm unhindered by any fear or insecurity when it comes to throwing out ideas. For instance, that song we have together, Halloween, it is a crazy idea. And if you're in the room with someone who you're not, you know, courageous with, or you're a little bit reserved, you're not going to go in and say, hey, man, I was looking at this jack-o'-lantern in my house, and I thought, man, you know, the moment I met my wife in high school, the moment I met Lainey, I just felt like I could be myself, you know? Now, it's easy for me to say those things to you in this interview, but when you walk into a room with someone you may not know that well, that's scary, you know, to throw that idea out there because, you know, chances are they're going to say, one, we're never going to get that on the radio, and two, that idea is stupid, you know? And so, you know, some writers, like the Nicole Galyons of the world, it's almost like you forget you're in a writer's room. It's almost like you're on a therapist's couch and your soul is just bleeding out. And then when you leave, you look at what you've done, what you've created together, and it's unbelievable. And you can hardly believe that you wrote it, you know? And that's kind of how I feel about every song I've written with Nicole. But, you know, like I said, she gives me permission to be me. And when that happens in a writer's room, you're always going to get something special.
I don't know why I'm like this, but what would it change if I knew? Maybe my parents messed up, but hey, they're just dressed up kids too. Baby, I guess what I'm trying to say is I love you for being somebody I'm not ashamed to introduce my skeletons to. I still put on my Superman cape and hide in it, but when I'm with you, it comes untied for a minute. Hits the ground in the shadow of your skin. For the first time, I was comfortable in mine when I knock, knock, knocked on your door. Every mask I ever wore shattered like glass on the floor. It was like
Halloween ended.
Every mask I ever wore shattered like glass on the floor.
The second quote is from your buddy Josh Jenkins, who says, when you hear the breadth of his honesty on the surface, people just want to write him off as rap or whatever. And I'm like, no, because when you hear the breadth of his heart and his music, he says things like no one else can say them.
Man, I mean, I appreciate Josh's comment. And yeah, I mean, gosh, Josh and I, we've written 50 songs, you know, together over about 6 years. And I always leave excited to lay whatever we've done down. And look, I don't know what I have to offer that's so special, but what Josh said about me is really true about every single person if they can remove the distractions. And because you and I could start with the same song idea, but we both have a story to tell. And if we just tell the story in our speaking voice, in our heart language, it's going to be unique. It will be rare and it will be special. However, it will also speak to everyone at the same time. Like, it will be the most relatable thing we could write, but it will be also personal to us. And that's, you know, what I feel like Josh and I are able to do, even with Fancy Like. I mean, as fun as that song is, I come out of the gate and I'm thinking of my wife. And I just say she's banging, and she is low maintenance. And she doesn't even, like, I don't even know if Lainey has ever opened a bottle of champagne, and she doesn't care. And, you know, and when I do take her to Wendy's, it's freaking amazing. And she loves it, you know, and we dip our fries in our Frosty. And, you know, it's down, again, I know it's fun. It's light. There's not a lot of depth there, but it's just the truth.
My girl is banging, she's so low maintenance. Don't need no champagne, popping entertainment.
Take her to Wendy's, can't keep her off me. She wanna dip me like them fries in a Frosty. But every now and then when I get paid, I gotta spoil my baby with an upgrade. Hey, 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 hey. Yeah, we fancy like Applebee's on a date night. Got that Bourbon Street steak with the Oreo shake and some whipped cream on the top too. Two straws, one check, girl, I got you. Bougie like Natty in the styrofoam. Sweet squeaking in the truck bed all the way home. Some Alabama jammer, she my Dixieland delight. That's how we do, fancy like.
But it, you know what? In a way, there is a lot of depth there because that is a lot of people's experience. In a way, I'm just now thinking of it, but you're kind of like a modern-day Tom T. Hall. He was really great at just finding everyday things. He was great at finding the everyday beauty that, most of us miss.
Right. And I that is a gift that he had. And I don't, you know, I overlook some of that stuff. But one of my one detail I pay attention to whenever writing a song is I just want to hear it sung like I would speak it almost, you know, just, I never want to write poetry. I think that's, I just think that's a waste of time to me. Like I don't appreciate poetry. I just want to say it like if you and I are having a beer, you know. You mentioned Dad's Sailboat, you know. Hey, you and I are sitting at a bar. Dude, there's a for sale sign on my dad's sailboat, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even ask Mom why, because I already know, you know? Man, shit, I knew he'd get old, but I didn't know it hurt like this.
There's a for sale sign on my dad's sailboat. Don't even ask Mom why, because I already know. Yeah, I knew he'd get old, but I don't know, I guess. Had no idea it was gonna hurt like this. We used to see who could hug the tightest, and I couldn't take him. Now I barely even squeeze, cause I feel like I'ma break him. Bet he wonders why it takes me so long to let go. There's a for sale sign on my dad's sailboat. Part of me wants to tear it down and let it drown in the river. Forget the inevitable and pretend that heroes live forever. Part of me wants to buy it and keep it like I wish I could him. But I know that ain't gonna make Dad young again. Tears don't care if I don't want them to come. I'm trying to take it like a man, but I'm taking it like a son. Taking it like a son.
As a person, you know, I just want to say, I want to tell you, I want each song of mine to come on in the radio and in everyone's car, and I want them to feel like they're sitting with just a person who's just like, man, I'm just trying to stay out of AA, you know, like
maybe that's why your style is the way it is, because you're exactly describing your style,
right? Well, I mean, if you go back to hip hop, and I know a lot of people go, hey, you know, he's hip hop or he's hip hop. I hate this hip hop country stuff, but I'm probably going to make some people mad here, but when you think about it, and I've thought about this way too much, but you know, I grew up listening to country and I grew up listening to hip hop, and in all the genres of music, okay, those two genres, they just tell you the story. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they just say, like, if you went to the gas station and you got a 40 and you took it home to your baby and then y'all made out and you smoked a cigarette, that's what you say in yep. both of those genres. Now, you know, pop. You're like, man, I feel like this song's like a butterfly. And somebody would be like, nah, it's about a mountain. And you're like, I don't care. It just feels good, you know? And there are some, you know, pop songs, obviously, that have lyrics that are more story-oriented. But hip-hop and country, they both tell it like it is. And part of your identity as a hip hop artist and a country artist is really just your stylistic delivery, like how you speak and how you talk. Like my favorite line in AA is, I'm just trying to do the dang thing. Cause that's something I would say, you know, like, yeah. Other than that, man, I can't complain. I'm just trying to do the dang thing, you know? And to me, that takes the listener from listening to some paisley out star with a rhinestone jacket in a jet to a dude that he's standing on the sidewalk with. And I don't know if people realize that, but I think it's the same as fancy. Like, it's like, man, every now and then when I get paid, I always spoil my baby with an upgrade, you know? And it's like, I just like to talk to people. I don't like to yell at them. I don't like to oversing and be dramatic. And but you did notice, and I really do, I have a real passion for elephants in the room, things that we're all thinking but we never say. I love the hurt in life that also has a redemptive quality. I think it's very, very beautiful in life about how tragedies make us members of certain clubs, and you would never want someone to be in that club, but you're glad when you meet someone who is. And, I love talking about that stuff, you know?
I wonder, like, given the digital age that we're in, and I've talked to songwriters who say, they sit down in the room, and because there aren't album cuts any longer, and, you know, there are so many revenue streams for writers and artists that have just vaporized, they feel like they've got to try and aim for the bullseye every single time. And, you know, so I guess from the business end, I can understand, you know, that aspect of it. But do you ever... It sounds to me like you are long past worrying about that. And in a way, I'm not quite sure where I'm going with this, but it seems like the stuff that you write, when it connects, it maybe doesn't reach as wide an audience, but when it connects, man, it connects, if you know what I mean. And you don't just have a listener who likes this song. You have somebody that you've drawn into your world and touched, and that's a rare thing. And to me, as a music fan, that's the greatest possible thing that music can do, both for an artist, but for a fan as well. I've gotten through life hanging on rock lyrics and country song lyrics. I mean, there, I've thought, well, if John Mellencamp can go through this, I can. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, man. And you're hitting the nail on the head as far as like me as a person. Like I learned it from my dad. My dad, he loved to sail, you know, you heard the sailboat song, and he loved to race. That was one of his favorite things. He would do sailboat races. And this is really funny, but every sailboat race that I ever raced with him, the entire fleet, like the entire group of sailboats, like we're talking 100 boats, would go one direction, and my dad would go the complete opposite direction, and we would be this lone sailboat far, far, far off in the distance, and we would either win the entire race or we would lose miserably, but we never came in the middle. And I loved that. As a matter of fact, I'm about to start crying just talking about my dad, because I don't know why he was like that, but that's just, he was an individual, and I am the same way. I don't want anything to do with bunting, hitting singles, doubles. I want to either have the song Briefcase that literally meets someone exactly where they are, whose dad is dying and they're in hospice right now, and it helps them that day. And that's all I'm interested in doing.
I hated when Dad picked up his briefcase, cause that meant that he was leaving. But I love the sound that his keychain made when he got home in the evening.
I was always sad, mom was always mad. Most nights he showed up late, set his briefcase down like he didn't weigh a pound. No, I never understood the weight, but mama always left him to play. 18 said I'ma be anything, but just like my old man, selling houses to all those families while his family sat at home missing him. Got sick of playing ball games, watching all the other dads watch their kids. So I picked up a guitar case, 'cause it wasn't square like his. Now I sound like him, and I look like him, and I walk like him, and I talk like him, and I try to make my wife laugh when she's mad, 'cause I love my job like him. Now I get it that it's a juggling act between feeding the kids and feeding the dreams we chase. I guess it gets hard, doesn't fall too far from a briefcase.
I don't get any appreciation aiming for some commercial bullseye that makes me some money or gets me played on radio. That does absolutely nothing for my soul. And I refuse to try to do that. Now, hey, if one comes along, obviously, yeah, if You Broke Up With Me comes along and Fancy Light comes along, I'll enjoy it. And I'm excited. But I swing for the fence, and I swing hard, and I swing out of my shoes, and I'm not going to do, you know, what the herd is doing.
Damn, that might be the best 2 minutes I've ever had on this podcast.
Come on, man, dude, I respect that so much. Yeah, man, I appreciate you saying it, but you know you got me fired up. I think in this world there's too many people settling for security and comfort, and you know they have so much to offer if they would, you know, swing harder and become unbound by parameters and what people think and, you know, what people say is working or, you know, but man, I love what I do, and it hasn't always been easy. But I'm so grateful for this past year. And, now, man, the gloves are off. I mean, we are going crazy. Josh Jenkins and I wrote this week, and it's so much fun to write when things are going good.
All right. You've given me more time already than I expected, so I don't want to take up too much more, but I do want to touch on some of your songs and get some of your thoughts behind them. And one of the things that I love about you so much is that you're 2 years alcohol free now, and you don't shy away from talking about that battle. And again, that's a subject that people are going to connect with you on. And you're probably, whether you ever find out about it or not, going to help a few people. And AA is like that. AA's got a good sense of humor to it. Another one that's a little more dramatic, and also you wrote it so well, it's almost like a short story. It's Beer in the Fridge.
Oh, thanks, man. That's one of my all-time, you know, favorite songs. And that beer is a real beer. You know, it was kind of a daily battle for me that I was able to win on a daily basis by shutting that refrigerator on that last beer, you know, when I just quit. And, man, I just don't think we were put here on earth to celebrate all the time. Earth, you know, earth and life celebrations are very rare. Most of life is hard. And the older you get, you know, the more friends you lose, and the less control, you know, you just realize you have little control over this life. And I think we are united by our struggles. And I found that, really, I found that in my own life. The more open I was about my addiction, the more friends I made who could relate and we could help each other, you know?
I ran into your mom at church. She said, I've been praying for you. Guess now that you've moved on, she ain't mad at me no more. The magnolias on Old Shelf Road smell so bittersweet. Sometimes I still wanna get messed up, but you'd be proud of me. There's a beer in the fridge, last of 12. Sole survivor of my last all-nighter in the back of the bottom shelf. It's gonna be there in the morning, even though you won't. You're the reason I quit drinking, the reason I wanna get drunk. I still look out for the cops when I'm driving around town. And I'm still not quite sure what to do with my hands in a crowd. There's a lot I can't remember and a lot I can't forget. One silver bullet in a chamber and I'm playing Russian roulette with that beer in the fridge, last of 12. Soul survivor of my last all-nighter.
And praise God, I mean, it's helped some friends of mine. And I will sing about it till the day I die. I'll also still sing drinking songs because I can drink really good, you know. and I'm not embarrassed about it, you know. And I don't, you know, one of the saddest things in the world that can happen, I think, is someone can be honest about a struggle and someone can react in a certain way that makes someone ashamed. And I think it's a merciful approach to songwriting to just say, hey, everybody, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I can't drink. But, you know, here's a drinking song for everybody who does drink in here. Let's go. You know,
you're not the only country artist that doesn't drink and sings drinking songs. Brantley Gilbert's a great example of that. When you were considering giving up drinking, were you worried about what it might do to your creativity, to your creative process, or were the two ever connected?
Yeah, man. My first show sober, it was basically like starting over. I mean, my fingers didn't work right. My voice was shaky and insecure. After every song, I reached for the beer that wasn't there. You know, it was frightening. Going to write every day, you know, there was this lie in my head, you know, that I could no longer, that I wasn't brilliant without the numbness, you know, of a buzz, you know. But since then, I've really found that I actually feel my feelings more, which allows me, you know, to dump them out more effectively, and they actually just kind of come out more raw, you know, and I like it. But it was a process. It wasn't like snap, oh, this is amazing. I mean, it took me several shows to learn how to perform sober, and it took me several writes to become comfortable writing without a vice.
Another song I want to ask you about is another song about you kind of hitting rock bottom and not having anywhere else to turn at the moment. And then along comes somebody named Craig. First of all, is Craig a real guy? Was that his real name? And the story I know is true, correct?
It's a true story. Yeah, man. My wife and I, we have one car. We had just had our sixth kid. I was working at Costco. I was drinking at the time. And I met Craig at a church called Redeeming Grace. And it is literally word for word what happened. I mean, he loved us despite our differences, you know, in beliefs, and despite my alcoholism and our you know, financial situation. Him and his family opened their doors wide to us, and he showed up at my son's baseball game and gave us his minivan, and It was wild, man.
I'm at Craig at a church called Redeeming Grace. It's like he understood my I don't wanna be here face. I didn't bow my head, not one single prayer, but he just shook my hand, said I'm glad you're here. He says we'll all be judged, but he was never judgmental. And even though my songs, they don't belong in no hymnal. He quoted me my lyrics, slapped me on the back, said man, you got a gift, how you write like that? Yeah, I know, he sounds cool, right? Not your typical kid from Sunday school, right? I still ain't figured out church yet, but Craig, I get. So now he can't walk on water for turning half a valley red. But he just might be tight with a man that did. Now he ain't the light of the world, but I wish my was bright as hell. Yeah, he just might be tight with a man that did. When you lose a record deal, y'all, the perks fade fast. Dealership said we're gonna need to get that minivan back. So we were down on one car and broke as I fell. Had my wife.
Then Craig and I actually just finished a book called Glad You're Here. And it's basically my testimony, and it walks through you know, addiction, our seventh kid, and a Christian. And now Craig and I are next door neighbors.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Stuff, man, I have such a passion for songwriting embedded in me. It's wild. I don't know what I would do without songwriting. I mean, I really, it is such a love of mine.
It's who you are.
Yeah. It's funny. I didn't even know it, you know, till I was 23, you know, and I kind of sometimes wish I could redo childhood just to write, you know, and see what did I feel then, you know, because, you know, childhood is, it's weird, you know, for everybody, and it'd be interesting to know what music I would have made.
That's kind of an interesting reflection. Yeah.
Well, it's such a, I mean, I said, you know, I don't know. Life is just so, I mean, I don't understand addiction. I'm not a therapist, but I just, you know, sometimes I look at life and I can't find a lot of things in a day that I do that's not really just me coping, you know, with life, you know, even down to my relationship with my wife and kids. Sometimes I'm like, am I loving them, or are they just a hobby right now, you know, to distract me from the hurt? And I know that's dark, but you know, songwriting is such an escape, and it's a way for me to sift through all my emotions and find the ones that are real and dispose of the ones that are fake, you know. And and I really, you know, I obviously, the bottle was songwriting for me in high school, and I often wonder, what if I had found a paper and pen, you know, and put it all out there then, would that have saved me from some mistakes I made? I don't know.
You said something in an interview recently when I was getting ready to do this interview, I read that I loved. And I'm a father of three. I got three grown kids. But you were talking about how you tried to find something with each one of your kids that you can relate to, that is your thing with them. And it made me reflect, and I was wondering, have I done that with my three kids? And lo and behold, yes, I have. It's never been a conscious thing. You know, it was something right. I never thought about it. But with each kid, I have a thing that we talk about, that it was like you articulated what I'd been doing. It's like, oh, cool. Yeah. So, you know,
that's beautiful. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean,
you're on the right track with that for sure.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I had, I, you should go listen to a song of mine called Chapel when you get a chance. And it's about my first son, just kind of my misunderstanding of, you know, fathering a son and mistakes I made.
Chapel. Saw you in that ultrasound. Pictured you hitting Jackson, breaking tackles. That's my boy, top 10 countdown. Taught him everything he knows. Went home, put a football in your crib, baseball on your bill. Only 20 weeks alive, and I was already trying to live. I carry a sleep through you. I don't ever want to do that to you. Hadn't occurred to me, maybe you won't be an athlete. You might not like sports and wanna be a mathlete. And if that's the case, I ain't gonna treat you like no black sheep. I don't care if you never wanna track me.
Chapel, little apple, fall as far from the tree as you need to. My love can reach you. Chapel, little apple, fall as far from the tree as you need to. My love can reach.
You know, fathering a son and mistakes I made. I have dived or dove, whatever you say, into many things like Minecraft and Pokemon and all kinds of things that you know, Fortnite even. I've gone in head first. I don't want to distance myself, you know, from them. I want to communicate with them. So, man, I'll do it all.
I'd make my boys so mad because they were when they were both still here at home and they were playing Fortnite, and I sucked at it. And so I figured out I could always last until like the last three or four if I just hid for the whole game, and they hated me for doing it.
Me too. Me too. I would go, I would just go find that robot and get in it and like walk around in the woods, and my kids, they'd be like, "You're cheating," you know, and how many people did you kill? And I was like, it doesn't matter. I lasted.
No,
you know?
I'm a peace loving guy. I would go, I'd go for walks. I'd go sightseeing.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. Those are the people that make it down to the wire, man.
Walker, it has been such an unbelievable kick to talk with you. You're funny. You're smart. You're deep. And you're original, and that's a great combination. You're also sincere, and like by all accounts, you're somebody that is just super easy to root for.
Hey, thank you so much. You ever just want to hang, man? Talk about kids. Give me a buzz. I'll take you to Applebee's. I got a whole bunch of gift cards.
We're going to take it out with the song that you played in our conference room like 11 or 12 years ago, because I need an answer. Kitchen table. Did that really happen?
True story, man.
True story.
I mean, I know it's kind of gross, but that's real life. We have repainted it. We've repainted it several times, but that table still lives.
You still have the table.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great.
It's right next to our piano and next to the dartboard. But yeah, we painted it many. It's the table of many colors, and it's still there.
Man, thank you so much. Take care. Go enjoy your family. Dude,
thank you. Have a good one. Talk to you, Tom.
It was used, but it looked new to a couple kids like me and you. So we threw it in the truck and took the slow way home. We made out. Did every light fogged up the windows in our drive. Then we carried it to the kitchen where we christened it all night long. Blood, sweat, and tears. All those years soaked inside the maple. To work this out.
for this month's edition of Write You a Song. Again, a huge thank you to Walker Hayes for joining us. And now I think we'll be on a little hiatus for a few months unless somebody else drops in. In the meantime, if you're new to the podcast, go back through the archives. We have so many interviews with so many huge names in the country songwriting community. If you're an aspiring songwriter, it's basically a masterclass. And if you just love songwriting stories, there's plenty of that too. If you can, share this podcast on social media, because that's about the only marketing I have. If you can, give it a review and a few stars, and we'll be back with Write You a Song in a few months. I'm Tom Maley from the studios of KNCI Radio in Sacramento. Thank you again for listening.